Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
How about Jameson Taillon? Nobody talking about him right now. Pete Armstrong homers, Matt Shaw homers, Ben Brown with the big ninth inning, eighth inning, Hobie Milner with the save. Jameson Taillon, seven innings, quality start, gave up three runs, stabilizing that starting rotation during a time where, you know, the starting rotation, the pitching has been in flux. Big time performance for Jameson Taillon, big time performance for the Cubs. They win the series at Petco Park, 3-3 against the Dodgers and the Padres. Yes, please, good series.
All right, hour number three, broadcast live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Judson Richards here with you. The Cubs win a great one today in San Diego, split 3-3 against the Dodgers and the Padres. That voice you just heard is none other than the Marquis Alex Cohen. Alex, I guess I will have to change the direction I was going to begin, because you said no one is talking about Jameson Taillon, but for you, let's talk about Jameson Taillon. Seven innings he goes today. Yes, we'll get to Ben Brown, who kind of became the story along with PCA, but Jameson Taillon, among others, right, has held their own as we watch this team deal with so many injuries.
Yeah, I mean, he's been the ultimate stabilizer. I mean, it's just, what, fourth year with the Cubs, and just being able to go every fifth day, and you know that you're going to get, you know, at least 4 2/3, five innings from J-Mo, and he's going to keep you in ball games. And I understand that he sometimes gives up home runs, a majority of them solo home runs, and he stabilized today to be able to go on the road. And he's been a much better pitcher at home than he has been on the road, but to go on the road in San Diego to win the series and go seven innings, give up three runs, and give the team an opportunity to win, which they held on to do, I think it was a huge start for them. Going into an off day, then starting a homestand at Wrigley Field on Friday, it was a big win.
Is he a little bit of a forgotten man?
I won't go with a forgotten man. He doesn't get compensated like one, but I think he's somewhat underappreciated. When you talk about Cup starting pitchers, it's like, who's going to be the ace? Well, you don't need Jameson Taillon to be the ace. You need to be a good three and a good four, and he's been a good three and a good four the last, what, 2.5 years? Like, I think that not every pitcher has to be a stud. What you need from some starting pitchers is, as I said, to get five innings, six innings, keep you in games, and that's what he does. I think that he's generally underappreciated.
Alex, do they have an ace? Is there one that you kind of slap right at there out of the front? Is it Edward Cabrera simply because of the stuff?
I mean, I think Edward Cabrera's been great. He's got, what, a 3.06 ERA. He's 3-0. He's got, what, a sub-1-2 whiff. Shota Imanaga's pitching like Shota Imanaga in 2024, not 2025. I'm not going to say they have an ace, but they have two pitchers at the front of the rotation right now who are pitching to the tune of, what, a top 20 starter in baseball. It's a nice luxury to have.
Alex Cohen of the Marquee Sports Network with us tonight on 104.3 The Score. Alex, I appreciate a good coming-of-age story, right? Perhaps one of my favorite genre movies. What about the coming-of-age of Ben Brown, whether it's today or over the course of the season? But I thought today especially, I mean, how great of a situation to be in on getaway day. That he gets to think about that on the flight home and doesn't have to return to the ballpark on Friday. This was a hell of an inning and 2/3 for Ben Brown.
Yeah, that's a big boy Ben Brown outing right there. And I've seen a lot of Ben Brown just dating back to my time in Iowa, and just the growth and the maturation and the confidence and really the different pitch arsenal. And you saw Ben early on in his career. He was four-seamer curveball. He's throwing a sinker so effectively, and to be able to throw that and get the double play ground out in the eighth inning to really zap any type of momentum that – was so huge. And I think that in this role, a multi-inning reliever, a high leverage reliever, is perfect for Ben Brown for the 2026 Cubs. He's a huge X factor, and he showed it today.
Cubs beat the Padres 5-4 in a thriller in San Diego. Cubs head home. They'll have the Arizona Diamondbacks on Friday, a game you'll hear right here on 104.3 The Score, 1:20 Friday start, of course, and you can watch it on the Marquee Sports Network. Alex Cohen joins us now on 104.3 The Score. Alex, it's a conversation we've had in the past, but I'd like to reset it a little bit. PCA, with the injuries that he dealt with as a kid that came out of high school, he didn't have a lot of minor league at-bats, Brad. I think he is still learning on the job, but doing it with an exceptional skill set, but also doing it at the highest level.
Pete Armstrong's 24 years old. Remember, he is a year and a half younger than the average AAA position player when he didn't get a lot of at-bats. And remembering this is just his second full season in the big leagues, for him to be able to make this type of growth, especially as a defensive first player, he was known as a defense first player coming out of high school, you know, going up through the ranks of the Cubs organization, being a top prospect in the organization because he's the best defensive outfielder in the sport. Anything that he's doing offensively right now, I'm not going to say is a bonus, but it's something that I think has exceeded expectations. There are going to be struggles. He is going to strike out. But I said this on the postgame show today on Marquee Sports Network. Good players strike out. They strike out. So if you're concerned about Pete Crow Armstrong's strikeouts, go look at Shohei Ohtani's strikeouts. Go look at Aaron Judge's strikeouts. Go look at Kyle Raleigh's strikeouts. Go look at Kyle Schwarber's strikeouts. They're a lot. It just depends on what they do during the at-bats or they don't strike out. And now over more than half the season in 2026, what he's done in at-bats that he doesn't strike out have been good. He's getting on base more. He's drawing more walks. And now he's starting to hit for more power. The sky is the limit for Pete Crow Armstrong. And I think right now the arrow is pointing up to his 2026 season.
Is there anything numerical or obvious that we've seen him make adjustments over the last 2 weeks specifically?
Walk rate. His walk rate over his first 15 games rather than his last fit. So his last 15 games, he has a 10% walk rate. His first 15 games, he had a 4% walk rate. That's the difference right there. He's seeing more pitches. He's getting on base more. He's scoring more runs. He's being more selective. And I think what really showed to me was the first game of the Padres series against a really difficult lefty in Adrian Morejon and then coming down from 1-2 and then drawing a walk. That's not something that he would do in the first 15 games. Really not something that he would do last year. Yeah, he has, I think, 9 walks this season. He had 9 walks through his first 56 games in 2025. He had 9 walks on Memorial Day. So he's just growing as a hitter. He's getting on base more. And I think just over the last 16 games, he's been really good.
How much did you watch Moises Ballesteros when you were in Iowa? Or was he kind of before your time? Because he, you know, he's somewhat. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I didn't interrupt you. I got to see him in 2024, and he hits.
Like, yes, he does.
He is doing what his scouting report says. He just flat out hits.
Yep.
Did I think that he'd be hitting to this tune as a 22-year-old in the big leagues, being, you know, arguably the best hitter in baseball through the first month of the season? I didn't, but I knew that he would be able to hit. And people talk about, like, what position is he going to play defensively? Well, it doesn't matter if he hits like this. So I've not all that surprised. I'm just really impressed with what he's been able to do or what's going to be his first full season in the big leagues.
Alex, if you could, give us the latest on Justin Steele. What we should know about that situation.
Yeah, I think Justin said it the best on Twitter. He's just frustrated. Stuff happens. And I think the goal is to get Justin back before the end of the season. And if you can get him back in July, as Craig Counsell said, you know, that was part of the equation there. I think that that's a plus. Now, were we expecting this in March? I think we were expecting Justin Steele to be back somewhere in the June area. I think you're looking more like the July area and him getting back into the full swing of things in August. But when it comes down to it, if you can get meaningful innings from Justin Steele this regular season, it's a good thing.
What about this bullpen staff? I know that they've dealt with a ton of injuries, but what do we know about the guys? Is there any sign that Craig Counsell is finding a rhythm with his bullpen, or it's got to be near impossible with these injuries?
Well, I think Ben Brown is making a really good case for that, just seeing what he's been able to do. I think Hobie Milner has been pretty steady. I just think getting Daniel Palencia back will be huge, and they're saying that there is a possibility that he could be activated at least during the homestand, but possibly during that Diamondback series. I mean, if you can get an arm back like that and he's healthy, it completely transforms the bullpen. So I think they're doing their best. I think getting Daniel Palencia back sooner rather than later will make this bullpen much, much better.
Alex, what do you make of this team so far, 19-12, and the way they performed? I've said it earlier in the show that they seem to be such not just a veteran-laden group, but a mature group as well. I watched the way that they rebounded after the Cade Horton news. No one was hanging their head, and as we've continued to watch another name pop up on the IL, it feels like Taylor McGregor opens the television broadcast regularly with the latest on the injury updates. But a veteran-laden group seems to show up and be ready to play each and every day.
Yeah, I think especially with their offense, and you look at their offensive stats, even with the rough start that they had through the first homestand, they are top 5 in pretty much every category. They are number 1 in on-base percentage. They are number 3 in runs scored. They are number 4 in hits, so number 4 in homers. So I just think the ceiling of this lineup is so good when you have those type of numbers without PCA being PCA for half the season so far, without Michael Busch being Michael Busch, with Seiya Suzuki being out for the first 2 weeks. The fact that they can kind of piecemeal it together to be a top five offense without everybody clicking, I think they're going to slug their way to wins, and I think they're showing that.
Alex, you're a bit of a foodie, aren't you?
I love food. I am exceptionally two-dimensional. I like talking about baseball. I like eating food. That's really about it. That's all that I'm good at.
Can I ask you your last best meal that you've had, or the most interesting one you'd like to share?
The last best meal I had, I took my parents to Bavette's. They were in town a couple weeks ago, and we just had like the most quintessential perfect steakhouse meal. Mm. You know, through the four of us, we split three different steaks. We had four different sides. We got two different desserts, and it was just divine. It was perfect.
Mm. The last time I had that many different portions of the meal, I think I picked up the Kentucky Fried Chicken on the way home for the kiddos. But hey,
love that.
Great mashed potatoes.
The same thing.
Yeah. Alex, you're the best. I know, busy day for you on pre and post with the Cubs, but with the Marquee Sports Network. But this is a really, really fun team to discuss and talk about. And thanks for doing it with us tonight on 104.3 The Score.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Alex is the best. There he is, Alex Cohen. We'll hear him on play-by-play at some point when Boog Shambi is away, but holding it down with pre and post. I think Cole Wright was away today. He was here with Lance and with Elise as well. Yeah, this Cubs team, again, I feel like if you were to just follow their transaction page when it came to the IL and how many injuries they've had, you thought, well, there's no way that this team has been able to be competitive, especially with the really sour news of Cade Horton loss for the season, Justin Steele, the flexor strain, and he's now pushed back for at least a month, and I think there was hope they could get him back after the All-Star break, but who really knows what that can mean, and all they do is continue to show up, play good enough baseball to be 19-12, a game out of first place in their own division, and beating a really, really good Padres team 5-4 on a Sunday. Let's go back to the phones, 312-644-6767. I was talking about PCA, the final segment there on the 7 o'clock hour. Russ from Payless Heights wants to weigh in on that a bit. Hey, Russ, what's going on?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. If PCA has a 50-point difference and he hits better left-handed pitchers than right-handed pitchers, he may have a dominant eye problem. That is, his right eye being the dominant eye that he can pick up a left-handed pitcher. But if he's got a right-handed pitcher throwing the ball, his lesser eye picks the ball up slower. Do you get my
yep.
Description? That can very well be a problem. For instance, for me, I played a lot of golf, and when I developed a bad left eye, I no longer could follow my drives as they flew in the air. I could follow short shots, but not my drives because they got out of my range too fast. I could no longer follow them.
So you think that it's a eye dominant thing potentially for PCA? Do you think that just against lefties, maybe he may lock in a little bit better, keep his head on the ball longer?
The dominant eye is the eye that sees things first. Our eyes are not equally distant towards the objects. Okay. We see that first, and his right eye, since he's a left-handed batter, is the front eye. Therefore, I suggest he's got it. That is his dominant eye.
Russ,
and his lesser.
Yeah, no, I got you, Russ. Thank you. As a former left-handed hitter myself, I understand what the lead eye is when batting left-handed. That would be your right eye. Interestingly enough, Max Muncy, he was wearing those glasses against the Dodgers, and I guess he is left-eye dominant as a left-handed batter, and so it helps him see the ball better. But again, we're doing a bit of a deep dive on the dominant eye of PCA. If you're paying a guy the millions of dollars, I'm sure they've probably done the cover one eye, which do you see? The team is probably very aware. And another way you can change that is just by opening your stance more, so you have your whole head looking out towards the pitcher instead of just one lead eye. But again, Pete Armstrong, whether it's right-handed or left-handed, has shown some really great at-bats over the last 2 weeks. And as Alex Cohen just laid out in a really great fashion, Pete, as a very, very young man at 24 years of age, missed time due to injury in the minors, where you're supposed to be getting 500 at-bats a season. And you learn about yourself, whether your right eye or left eye dominant. You learn about your approach. You learn about how you hold the bat, how you hold your stance, and all of that he is doing at the big league level. And by the way, all of that, which he did as earning his way as the starting center fielder, in the All-Star game in 2025. Can he do that again this year? I don't know. All I know is you feel like you're watching the emotions of a young man being perhaps what he's working on first, not throwing things as much, not getting upset. We would all love to be, myself included, as a ball player, we would all love to be Manny Ramirez. Manny Ramirez looked like he'd forgotten the pitch that was thrown previously because he didn't really care and he's always focused on what came next. But if you care deeply and you don't have that ability to turn the page as quickly as the former Boston Red Sox looked like he could do, then you have a tendency to hold on to things. And so whether or not Pete is holding on to things when he gets so angry and frustrated and wears his heart on his sleeve, I don't know. But it may be the best case if you can calm yourself down. It may help you turn the page where you aren't carrying your previous problem back to the plate with you as you get ready to hit again. But hitting is also all about confidence. And it is reaction-based. You react better when you are confident because you are thinking less. This is not that much different than your life. Whatever you're doing, if something is bothering you about that particular task, you are not doing it as well. That's why when they say confidence is everything, you can apply it to baseball. And so when you watch Michael Busch hit home runs in five consecutive games, I can promise you he's not thinking about his hand placement when he's at the plate. He is just reacting. And when Busch gets hot, he can get red hot. You know who else can do that? PCA. But this Cubs team returning home after splitting in Los Angeles and San Diego, going 3-3, finding themselves at 19-12. It's hard to believe they're seven games over 500 with what we've watched from an injury standpoint and also from the bullpen. If you want to weigh in on that, 312-644-6767. Our main conversation, I did the math tonight. I asked Siri, what is 31 games percentage-wise of 162? That's 19%. I can't do the math in my head, but I can ask my phone. So we're about 20% of the way through. We've finished April. How do you feel as a Cubs fan? 312-644-6767 about where this team is. Is it stay the course or is it get to work, Jed Hoyer? We can continue on that conversation. Also, we have collected, coming out of the draft, we have collected some of the best sound that we have heard regarding the Bears' six picks. So our top five tonight is the top five audio, Bears draft related, that you have heard on 104.3 The Score. If you've missed some of the good stuff, Kirk Ferentz was so good, head coach of Iowa. Brent Key was so good, the head coach of Georgia Tech, on those particular players. We have put together our top five best audio of the Bears draft. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up next.
Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
And then the last question for you is, how much do you like ketchup? Because I think Heinz 57 is about to give you a lifetime supply as the 57th pick.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I'll take as much as I can get. So that is awesome. That is really cool.
Did you know that?
I had no idea. That is crazy.
I think there's some endorsements coming your way.
Oh, there you go. Let's go ketchup.
Let's go catch up. Adam John's really working hard to get that Adam of Judson Richards back with you on 104.3 The Score. That was Logan Jones, the Bears' new center, as he learned that he had a lifetime supply of Heinz 57. You know what's funny is they say lifetime supply like you would need some fancy credit card or something. They probably just ship you like a giant container of maybe like, I don't know, 100 packets of Heinz 57. How quickly could you go through 100 cases, right? Or, I mean, just like 100 individual ones of Heinz 57, the plastic bottles. I don't think it's as much. And like, will he really hold on to the number to actually track them down and have an unlimited supply of Heinz, especially if you're making NFL money? I don't know. But they have this slogan, let's go ketchup. And if he needs to own that, let's go ketchup, let's go mustard, let's go relish, and let's go a center in the second round. Before we get to the top five, before we get to that, I love the NFL draft. I love working the NFL draft. And one of the things about the draft is you talk so much about it, you convince yourself what's going to happen. You're kind of forced into being convinced what's going to happen, whether it's mock draft or otherwise. You either make a mock draft or you have one favorite guy who does a mock draft, and then you kind of take them as gospel. But for me, it wasn't so much about the surprise of them going defensive line, it wasn't about who, it's about how. It's about how are the Bears going to be drastically better at getting to the quarterback and even stopping the run, just moving the quarterback off of his feet, making the quarterback uncomfortable. It's not about who, it's about how. I love the draft. I'm not crunching tape. I love the draft. I'm not trying to tell the Bears that I know Zion Young or Cassius Howe better than they do, right? I would hope that they know more about Peter Woods than I do. I would hope. But it's not about who the player is. It's about how are you going to do it then, right? It's like, well, then if it's not that path to getting better, then what is the other path? And I don't believe Ben Johnson when he simply says, well, we're just going to coach our guys better. We had a lot of conversation about the quote-unquote, we trust in Ben. Should you trust in Ben? Absolutely. Good, better, best. Why not? Like, the man has a plan. So if you trust in Ben Johnson, you absolutely should. So far, he's earned it, although he's earned 1 year of it. And trust is something that is built over time. So if year two doesn't look like year one, you may feel a little bit different about how you trust, and you may feel a little bit stronger about when they don't get any better draft-wise in the defensive line with what we saw from last year, like being 31st in pass rush win rate. So I'm not going to tell you that the Bears are going to get immediately better if they would have selected Zion Young. In fact, if they selected him, I would have told you that. But at least it would have given me a little bit of the how about how you think you're going to get better. Because as of now, I don't know. And I know you can tell me you're going to coach better, but I also know that talent versus talent, the better talent's probably going to win. Yes, they believe in Austin Booker. Great. Sure, they're going to get Shamar Turner back. Awesome. But getting Shamar Turner back is not the Lions getting Aiden Hutchinson back after his severe injury. You know what you had when he went down. So I'm still waiting for the plan. I trust in Ben, but damn it, I need a little bit more of the how. I don't care if it was Cassius Howe. Everyone that you had coming out of there injury-wise last year is going to have to be better. It is not just the who, it is the how. And as of now, I just don't know. From there, gentlemen, let's get into our top five. Oh, I like it. I like it a lot. This is what we thought we would do. Because the coverage on The Score, as always, has been exceptional. I've heard a lot of great interviews. We thought that we would choose our five favorites. So here is our top five favorite sound bites of audio that has come out with draft coverage on The Score. Let's begin with number five.
To recap what you said at the top, you think this draft is going to be the one that we look back on that clinched a Bears Super Bowl. Is that, am I paraphrasing correctly?
Before you're in the new stadium, Bears will win a Super Bowl.
Well, that's now you're hedging. Now you're absolutely hedging.
Yeah. Before 2030.
All right, so we will try to set the next one up a little bit better as David Dykstra and I are doing a dance for the first time. So that was Matt Miller, ESPN's Matt Miller. He believes the Bears will win Super Bowl in his next 3 years, sort of. That was with Spiegel and Holmes. Our next soundbite comes from Mullion Haw talking to Iowa head coach Kirk Ferentz. Here he is on the Bears' new center, Logan Jones.
You know, it's like anything, coaches, quarterbacks, whatever. You know, you've got to operate within your personality. You got to be who you are. There's a lot of false bravado out there and all that stuff. But competing is what you do when the ball snaps, or, you know, what you do when it's time to go to work. And Logan's all about the business. I mean, he's, you know, that's why he's become such a good player. And he had a good skill set, you know, 5-6 years ago when he showed up here. But he's worked so hard to develop it. And the way he goes about it, that to me is what's impressive. And you do the research on him. I mean, it's just, it's a guy, and I'm sure, you know, Chicago wasn't the only team that he looked at him. It's hard to find a flaw in the guy. I mean, he's not, apparently doesn't have long enough arms, but he's a third inch blocking guys at our level. So, you know, it's just, you know, he's one of those guys I can't say enough good things about.
Hard to find a flaw in the guy. And you know he's not no nonsense when he says, let's go catch up. I mean, that is a no-nonsense kind of human. All right, number three in our top five best sound bites coming out of the Bears draft right here on 104.3 The Score. Mullion Haw talking to Dave Wanstead. His thoughts on this Bears draft.
You know, I think when I look at the whole class top to bottom, I would say that it's a class that's that's well accomplished. By that, I mean these guys are 2, 3, 4 year starters. These guys are all conference players. Most receptions in the ACC, best kickoff returns in the SEC. Award winners, Remington Award winners, on and on. So I look at this class and say, most of these guys have truly accomplished quite a bit in their college careers. And, that's a good thing. They're not getting a bunch of guys that have never won before or excelled at their particular position.
That was Wani on Mully and Haw. Yeah, not only well accomplished, but also very, very clear. Just like the Kansas City Chiefs were like, all right, we're going all defense with the first four picks, very obviously. But the Bears were absolutely going to update on speed. Specifically, Dylan Thienemann, a 4.35 40-yard dash. That was fourth best in the entire combine. So not only do they get the speedster of a safety, but Xavier Thomas, you thought 4.35 was good. What about the 4.28? That Xavier Thomas runs. So they, whether it was offense or defense with Malik Muhammad or otherwise, the Bears decided absolutely they needed to get much faster on all sides of the ball, on all three phases, if you will. All right, number two of our top five sound bites coming out of the Bears draft coverage this week so far on The Score. Spiegel and Holmes talking to, love this guy, Matt Bowen, on pairing Dylan Thienemann with Kobe Bryant.
Well, I think you're out front because everyone wants to play two deep coverage. That's what you want to start in, Spiegs, and everything builds out from there. You know, if you watch the draft, a lot of analysts call it the shell coverage, right? So the quarterback comes to the line of scrimmage, looks like two deeper quarters, and then everything changes post-snap. That's when the picture changes. And with two safeties who have interchangeable traits, it gives you an advantage because you don't know who's rolling down, who's rolling back to depth. Both of them can play, if you're bringing all-out pressure, they can play over a slot or play over a tight end and flat-foot read and drive downhill in the football. And more importantly, you look at Bryant, his last 2 years, I think he has 7 picks. Thienemann had ball production in college. You have two safeties who will take the ball away. And last year, the Bears only had one.
By the way, I should mention all these interviews can be found on the Odyssey app. Also, a lot of them on our YouTube page as well. I would listen to all of them. Matt Bowen specifically is one of my favorite. If you're looking to learn about football, learn about the Bears, get a better understanding of the game itself, not only someone who played at the highest level, but talks a great game as well to help you understand exactly, specifically Dylan Thienemann talking and playing with Kobe Bryant. By the way, if we did a top five of best tweets regarding the draft, did you see the Kobe Bryant tweet? Former Seahawks safety that the Bears have now signed, where he just screenshotted after they drafted Dylan Thienemann, he sent out a photo of Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes' white man can't jump. I mean, that was a good tweet by Kobe Bryant. All right, where are we at? We're at number one. Number one of our top five best audio so far coming out of the draft. Head coach of Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, Brent Key. This was this morning on The Score on the Bears' 6th-round pick, Jordan Vandenberg. What kind of guy he is?
Yeah, I mean, to know him as a player is to know him, as a person, like you guys said, his story. A couple of things with that story. I mean, he walked on to the junior college. He was basically told he had to leave Penn State. They were ushering him out the door. He found a home here, worked his ass off and put himself in a position to compete every day and be a good football player. And this dude, he's the ultimate competitor. I mean, he is, to your face, he's going to smile, yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, the most polite person to get on the field. I mean, he will absolutely, snatch your soul out of you on the football field. And there's not a lot, he's so strong and powerful. He's one of the strongest human beings I've ever seen. And it translates to his play. I think, as he continues to grow, his ceiling is way, way high. He's got so much more growing to do as a player. From a technical aspect, because he's so raw right now. So, I think they got a steal where they got him.
No, that was good stuff. You love a good soul snatcher out on the football field. Not only Can he snatch your soul on the football field? He also is business savvy enough to get started with the laundromat, right? I mean, that's what I love to hear about these guys with the NIL. It's like, not how much money can you blow at the club, as the kids would call it, but what, you know, how is your money making you money, right? What is your passive income like? And that is the kind of guy that the Bears got in Jordan Vandenberg. As I discussed, you know, if you were to ask a question like, which draft pick is most important in 2026? I don't know if Logan Jones is getting an opportunity to start very quickly. Of course, they traded for Garrett Bradbury, the center from the New England Patriots. Sam Roush, a third tight end. Cole Kmet is still there. I mean, his importance may go when, as Cole Kmet goes and leaves, understand 13 personnel. Malik Muhammad will have a real chance to beat out Tyreek Stevenson. But man, with what we constantly discuss, the struggles in the run game, getting the quarterback as well, I mean, could you not say that Jordan Vandenberg, the sixth-round selection, the defensive lineman for a room that needs drastic help, could be the most important important player? You don't often make that decision because late-round guys are forgotten. I've seen a lot of late-round guys not make the team after they were selected. Now, I think Jordan Vandenberg is going to have a real chance to make this team, and if he's any good, he can be a difference maker. David, great job, bud. Well done. Our first top five together, and you nailed it. One thing about Jordan Vandenberg you continue to hear is how his grandfather was a competitive weightlifter and went up against Arnold Schwarzenegger. Does that make anyone else not just want to watch Pumping Iron? If you haven't seen Pumping Iron, I'm sure it's streaming somewhere. Baby T hasn't seen it. He's a baby. Why would you have? But Arnold Schwarzenegger's documentary in the late 70s about lifting weights, like this new phenomenon of bodybuilding, where Arnold is casually smoking weed and just getting in the head of Lou Ferrigno. Not only now do I not want to watch it, but I want to, is there any clips where Jordan Vandenberg's grandfather is competing against Arnold in said documentary, right? Like, if he's in the top six as he's flexing on stage as Mr. Universe, can I find Mr. Vandenberg at all in the great Pumping Iron documentary? That's got to be top five documentary of all time. Right? Text line is open, 312-644-6767. What is the best sports documentary you've ever seen? This is a local one, but I'm not just playing to the crowd. When I ask that question, I always have the same answer. Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams, I remember watching as an eighth grader. That is still the best documentary I've ever seen. But let us know, 312-644-6767, because Pumping Iron is right up there. And now I need to know if Jordan Vandenberg's grandfather is in it. One more clip I did want to get to, more from Matt Bowen with Spiegel and Holmes on if the Bears should have traded up for an edge rusher.
No, I don't think so. I really don't. And I think the reason is I don't know that there was a great fit among those guys that you just listed. So maybe... You know, TJ Parker's going to be fine. You know, he's going to be a strong side defensive end. He's going to be fine. But you would have had to go way up to get him. I think he went 35, right? I don't have my yes. board in front of me, but yes. You would have had to go way, way up to get a player like that. So I don't know that there was a spot where you say, let's, you know, come up the board this aggressively to get an edge. And I think it probably points to a team that maybe there's some more internal comfort with the young guys than we believe there is on the outside. And I think that's where you have to look at it and say, okay, do they think that some of these players that have been drafted in the past are going to be that guy that can, you know, opposite Sweat can be that guy. You know what? Dale was brought in a year ago as a big time free agent signing. So the hope has to be that they believe the arrow is still pointing up on these guys, to where they don't have to, you know, aggressively give up the assets and the capital to move up to get a TJ Parker, who you hope is a six sack a year type player who's going to be really good against the run.
All right, good stuff. My mistake, that was Matt Miller, not Matt Bowen. We got our maths confused there. Matt Miller of ESPN.com on Spiegel and Holmes on whether or not they're traded up for an edge rusher. It's a moot point as of now, because they're going with the guys that brung them there. They didn't bring them anywhere, but they're going to coach them up. We got some reaction on the best sports documentary you've ever seen, because Jordan Vandenberg's grandfather, I'm wondering, is in Pumping Iron. If you want to tell us what your favorite was, whether phone or text, 312-644-6767. We'll open the phones for the final segment coming up next.
Let's get back to more Judson Richards on 104.3 The Score.
All right, great show we put together so far. You missed any of it, you can find it back on the Odyssey app, the rewind function. I say great show. I guess it is really up to you, the listener. So you go back and you tell us. You find it on the Odyssey app. David Dykstra, who I've learned is related to Lenny Dykstra. This is breaking news. Perhaps it should be sponsored. Baby T, Tyler Farengel over there doing a great job holding it down. We stumbled into just a little something there. As I mentioned, Jordan Vandenberg's grandfather, it's been discussed now many times, was a bodybuilder and competed against Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I said, man, this just makes me want to watch Pumping Iron, which is such a phenomenal documentary with a young Arnold. I would highly recommend it. And we asked you out there, what is your favorite sports documentary? Let's hear it. And John in Prospect Heights wants to weigh in on this conversation. John, thanks for checking in on 104.3 The Score.
Good evening, Judson. Thanks for taking my call. My favorite sports documentary is the 30 for 30 called Once Brothers, based on the Yugoslav basketball team with Vlade Divac, Tony Kukoc, Dražen Petrović. I can't watch that without tearing up. Well, partially because I'm from there.
Yeah,
but I love that documentary. But I'll also throw in, I'm a big wrestling fan. I know Lawrence Holmes is too, if he's listening. My favorite one of those documentaries is the one on Roddy Piper on A&E. I recommend everybody watch it. So those are my two favorite at the moment right now.
John, I have seen Once Brothers. It is so incredibly powerful, and you're right. If you're looking for a documentary, highly recommend it. John, I can tell it hits close to home with you. Absolutely understand why. I mean, what an impactful story of what, you know, loyalty to your country and war and what that can do for Once Brothers. Two of that I thought of, the two Escobars, so good, the 30 for 30. Also, because I watched this guy at Fresno State. Do you guys know the name Chris Herron? Chris Herron, unguarded, when he tells the story about being in the starting lineup of the Boston Celtics in uniform, and he's got to go out back to score, I believe it was OxyContin. I mean, the drug usage and the ability that Chris Herron had unguarded was phenomenal. David, you got one for me, your favorite?
It'd be Once Upon a Time in the Bronx, the 30 for 30 about the 86 Mets.
About I've learned your third cousin, David Dykstra. Yeah.
Lenny. Yeah. Nails. Yeah.
I mean, you're right. You're David. He's Lenny. Does he have his own documentary yet?
He probably should.
Oh, let's go to Leo from Rockford, because this was the one that I mentioned. But Leo, your favorite documentary, what recommendation would you give?
Hoop Dreams, and by the way, my name is Neil, not Leo, but hey, it's all good. I just want to say Hoop Dreams is the best absolute documentary ever. And it was the first reality TV show before Real World and all that crap. And William Gates and Arthur Agee. Yep. Arthur Agee got a tough rap. Guess what? He went down the state. William Gates got all of the, he got everything given to him, and he did nothing for St. Joseph. But guess what? Coach Vitor is such a piece of crap. I hate that guy. I'm originally from Maywood, so I know about, you know, St. Joseph, you know, Westwood, Westchester, and all that stuff. But I'm just saying that Arthur Agee definitely came up, and guess what? He went to state with Marshall and everything, and he got screwed over with St. Joseph. It was it was so bad. I mean, what do you think,
Neil? Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I don't know if you heard me in the previous segment, but my favorite sports documentary of all time is Hoop Dreams. And listen, as a white kid, the way that I was growing up, it was important for me to see that movie as a 13-year-old and to really get a better understanding of how other people are living. It was eye-opening. Just, you know, forget about how remarkable it was, the amount of time that they stuck around, but just it was so educational. As you're coming up as a 12, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, to get a better idea of how other people live. Baby T, what are you watching?
Really quickly here, I'm going to say mine. I don't want to sound too chalky. It's The Last Dance, because a lot of the stuff that was brought to my attention was obviously before my time. I was born when Michael Jordan was a Wizard, so a lot of the stuff that I absorbed from that documentary was new to me, and I thought it was extremely fascinating hearing all those facts and information that was popping out of that. I thought it was great.
Here we are going years and years back doing a real deep dive on some classic docs, and you give me The Last Dance.
This I said is disclaimer, the best. Sorry if it's too chalky.
It is not. In fact, I mean, you're right. I can't wait to watch it with my son. It's going to be a few years because he's six, but you're right. I lived through the 90s Bulls, and I was being reminded and learning about so many things. David Dykstra, Little Lenny. I think you should be Little Lenny, and you should be Baby T. How do we feel about that? Tyler Farengold,
I like that nickname, duo.
Little Lenny, you guys are the absolute best. Thanks to our guests, Alex Cohen and Patrick Finley. I'm Jensen Richards. Have a wonderful rest of the night, everybody.